Hey, everybody. Good afternoon or good morning, I guess, depending on where you're sitting right now. Thanks for joining us. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on Weed at Work, Understanding Legalized Marijuana in the Office. More states across the country are legalizing recreational marijuana usage. A number of companies in the credit collection industry have become focused on what is allowed and what is not allowed when it comes to employee screening and testing for marijuana. In this webinar, we've got a panel of leading employment law experts who are here to share their insights into how companies can address this budding, all puns intended, situation to make sure that they are on the right side of the law. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the arm industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the arm industry. The site is free for anyone to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me now tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Kia Denner's legal practice is devoted to the Council of in Defense of Employers in Labor and Employment Law, Executive Compensation, and Cannabis Law. Kia is co-chair of the cannabis law practice at Fort Harrison and has extensive experience helping multi-state employers navigate the new and evolving laws and regulations throughout the country related to medical and recreational marijuana. He provides regular counsel to employers faced with marijuana-related employment issues, including advising on accommodation concerns for employees who use medical marijuana and drafting and refining employers' drug testing and enforcement policies. In 2017, the New Jersey Law Journal recognized Kia as its new leader of the bar for his extraordinary accomplishments and potential in the legal profession. Kia also lends his legal skills to several charitable and not-for-profit groups, serving on the board of the Community Visiting Nurse Association and the Personnel Committee for the YMCA of Metuchen, Edison, Woodbridge, and South Amboy here in New Jersey. Rebecca Stevens is a senior associate in Ferrella, Braun, and Martell's Employment Practice Group. Rebecca counsels clients on all aspects of employment law, including developing and implementing sound workplace policies, conducting investigations, handling challenging leave of absence and accommodation issues, and administering separations from employment. She also represents clients before administrative agencies, including the DLSE, the EEOC, and the DFEH. Rebecca also maintains an active pro bono practice, representing and advising several education-focused nonprofit organizations in employment matters. She is the chair of the Barristers Labor and Employment Section Executive Committee for the Bar Association of San Francisco, a member of the American Bar Association Labor and Employment Section, where she is on the Planning Committee for the National Symposium on Technology and Labor and Employment, and a board member for the Northwestern Law Alumni Club of San Francisco. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and an audio recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Now, sometimes I know for some of you who've listened or participated in the webinars in the past, sometimes there's a video component. That is not the case today. So if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing anything. This is just going to be a great conversation between Kia and Rebecca talking about the topic at hand. So with that, let's jump into our discussion today. Kia, let me give you the first question. Maybe we can start sort of by defining some of the terms. I know we've got, you know, THC, CBD, cannabis, marijuana. You know, are they all sort of synonyms for one another, or are there differences that we sort of need to understand as we go through this discussion today?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I think it's a good way to start out, and certainly in my practice, helping employers, especially multi-state employers that have to deal with laws in different states across the country, certainly the terminology gets bandied about a bit, and people need to understand what's what. So, you know, first of all, marijuana and cannabis are somewhat interchangeable, not to go into botany or any of the biochemistry here, but essentially you know, they are kind of interchangeable. When you talk about federal law, it talks about marijuana as a controlled substance, as a Schedule I controlled substance. They use the word marijuana and the term marijuana. It's an older term. It's something that originated in the 30s. And certainly, if you look at state laws across the country now that are either legalizing recreational marijuana or medical marijuana, actually the terms that are used in the statutes more often than not are now cannabis. So, you know, there's also a distinction to be made versus CBD and industrial hemp versus marijuana and or cannabis. And the important thing to know about that is that when you're dealing with industrial hemp, which CBD most likely is derived from, that is a form of cannabis plant, but it is non-intoxicating and it's defined under the federal law as being 0.3% or less in dry weight of THC. So let me just back up for a second, because I want to make sure I just fed everyone a lot of information. But sure. Essentially, you're talking about hemp on the one end and industrial hemp, which is now legal under federal law. And then you're talking about a drug that's intoxicating, which could be referred to as marijuana or cannabis. And that's the big distinction.
Yeah, one thing I'll add to that. And thank you, Kia. I actually learned a lot there myself. You know, people often talk about CBD, THC, you know, depending on the products, how they're labeled, you might see references to those sort of acronyms. THC, they're both compounds that are found in cannabis products. THC is a psychoactive compound in marijuana, so that's what causes people to actually feel high or become impaired. CBD is a different compound that's also found in cannabis products, but it doesn't cause people to feel high or to be impaired, but it does have some, you know, purported medical effects. So, you know, there's multiple varieties of products, many varieties of products that people might be using. Some of them may have THC, some of them may have CBD, and there's a difference in the effect that those drugs will have on people when they use them.
And Mike, if I might, before you head into the next question, I think the reason why it's a good question to start off this topic is because everybody on the phone now that has a workforce, they're dealing with this issue, you know, on the ground live as to what's now legal and what's not. And so, you know, everyone can know that you can go on Amazon right now and buy some quote unquote CBD oil. So it's out there. And the big thing that I'm seeing with clients that they're struggling with is how to communicate with their workforce as to what is kosher under their drug policies and what's not. And so Rebecca pointed out that CBD, if it's derived from industrial hemp, will not get you high. But the next question is that okay under our policies? And if you're drug tested, will CBD come up as a positive on a drug test? And the answer is usually not, but sometimes it might. So, you know, I've been getting questions about, well, how do we deal with that? Like, what do we tell employees? Like, is it okay for them to take CBD or not? How does that jive with our drug policies? And, you know, what, if anything, do we want to say about it as a company?
And what are your answers normally when you get those questions?
I'm glad you'd ask. So, you know, one thing you can do is certainly, you know, going back to the policy part of it, is most companies, especially multi-state companies, you'll have a drug testing policy. And I think most, even if you're a smaller company and you're only in one state, you probably have a drugs in the workplace type policy. And my experience is that, you know, many companies are probably using a policy circa 1988, you know, Nancy Reagan era, war on drugs, zero tolerance, and that's fine. But, you know, now with the spate of new laws across the country, you should probably take a look at that and see if that needs some modification. But sometimes when it comes to this idea of CBD versus marijuana and drug testing, I've seen clients, you know, send out, for example, a memo and saying, hey, just want to remind everybody that even though, you know, CBD use is, you know, on the rise, and maybe we're in a state here that has, you know, legal medical marijuana, for example, you know, just want to remind you, we have this policy and this is what our policy requires. One of the things that I've actually helped message with companies is around this concept of, okay, well, you know, I'm not a drug user, I'm not a medical marijuana user, but, you know, I have this CBD oil that I rub on my joint for arthritis. And, you know, I use that. And some of the things that we've said to employees through messaging is just be careful what you put in your body. Because one thing that's interesting about the CBD craze is that it is pretty much the Wild West right now, and it's not regulated well. And that's because the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, doesn't have a way yet to really, you know, regulate this. So what are you getting in the product you're using? Does it actually have 0% THC, maybe like the label says it does, or does it not? So there's court cases now popping up where you have people who take CBD or allegedly have taken only CBD, and then they get into an accident at work, and then they're tested for THC under their post-accident drug test policy, and then they come up positive. And so, you know, part of the messaging component on the policy side is to let folks know, hey, you're responsible for what you put in your body, and just be careful, because it could be that, you know, you would come up at a low level of THC. And then you should tell your people what that means under your policy.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just building off of some of the points that Kia made, one, with respect to the specific policies, you know, one example that we've come, what we've seen frequently as a concrete issue is we'll look at an employer's drug-free workplace policy and it will say, you know, you cannot use any illicit drugs while working or within a few hours of starting work. And that leaves a lot open for interpretation, because in states where either medical marijuana is legal or recreational marijuana is legal, employees may not view the phrase illicit drugs as encompassing cannabis products or marijuana products. And so we're actually having to go back and make those policies way more detailed and explain specifically what are the products, what are the drugs that are prohibited. If you're using a phrase like no illegal drugs, you're leaving a lot of room for interpretation, a lot of room for ambiguity, and probably a lot of room for disputes with your employees when issues arise. I 100% agree with Kia's point about the labeling. So, you know, this is sort of a new industry that's emerging. States have different regulations and requirements for cannabis products that are going on the market. Lots of companies may not be complying with labeling requirements. States may not even have very clear labeling requirements for products. So people will buy things that they think only have CBD, they don't have THC, they think they're going to be okay, and then it turns out that, you know, actually there's THC in the product. So, you know, there may be some education that's necessary for your employees around, you know, be careful about the products, they may not be labeled correctly. The FDA, you know, does have the authority to regulate CBD products, but it hasn't really done much. So far, at least the only activity I'm aware of that the FDA has been doing with respect to products is, you know, sending letters to companies that are making advertisements of health benefits and things like that, you know, basically saying that these claims haven't been vetted and you can't make those types of claims. But to my knowledge, they're not really doing much in terms of saying like, hey, you're not labeling your products correctly as to what they contain. So there's a lot of confusion in the market. I think there's a lot of confusion among consumers, and there's a lot of room for mistakes. And then you don't really want to find yourself in a position where you've given somebody a drug screen, they've come back positive for THC, and then you're in a debate with them about what did they use, and is that product prohibited by your policy, and, you know, is this a terminable offense, or should we give them a pass, or, you know, all those types of things. I think it's better to be clear up front so you're not having to have these arguments and these discussions with your employees after some big incident has occurred.
Yeah, Rebecca, that's okay. I think that's sorry to cut you off, Mike, but I just want to say that
that's
very sage advice there on being clear. And I just want to say that one, if there is one common theme that you see arising out of the lawsuits across the country over the years that have come out of folks who maybe have a disability and have a medical marijuana card and are subjected to a drug screen. And a lot of times you read this when you read these cases is that, you know, something along the lines of this, like the person then says, hey, just want to let you know, HR person, I'm going to come up positive because here's my medical marijuana card. I have cancer and I go to chemotherapy and my doctor has recommended that I use cannabis to control the symptoms of that. So just so you know, you test me, this is what's going to happen. Many times you read in the cases that the HR folks or the business people say something like, oh, don't worry about it. Like, don't worry about it. Okay, not going to be a big deal. And then what happens a couple weeks later, you know, they're fired because they didn't follow the policy or it violates the company policy. So it's just a little pointer there is, and it kind of piggybacks off of something Rebecca said is, you want to spend the time now to look at your policies, make sure they're very clear, get the messaging right to your workforce so that your HR folks and your management aren't put in an uncomfortable position. Because one of the things as employment lawyers we always like to do is we like to tell our HR people, you know, fall back on your policies. That's what we have them for. That's what we have handbooks for and we have policies for. And so you don't have to get into these long, drawn-out discussions that then find their way into reported case law. You can simply just say, hey, this is our policy. You know, here's our messaging on this. And, you know, we're just going to go ahead and follow the policy. And this is why this is happening right now. So it's something that I see over and over again. And it's understandable because it's a brand new area. And if somebody did come to you, like the scenario I just gave with a cancer patient, you know, that's probably the response 99 out of 100 of us would give. Don't worry about it. Okay, thanks. I'll take what you got and we'll go from there.
So I think one thing that might be helpful is to take a little bit of a step back and give you a sense of what the laws currently require of employers in states where either medical or recreational marijuana is legal. So the current landscape, we have legalized recreational marijuana in 11 states plus Washington, D.C., we've got, I think, 5 other states that may be passing something similar this year. We've got pending legislation in a few states. We've got ballot measures in a couple of other states. In 33 states, we have legalized medical marijuana. So it's spreading, and depending on what state you're in, there are different requirements. So the wrinkle here, I mean, most of you are probably thinking like, well, can I have a drug-free workplace policy? Can't I just say that we don't allow anybody to use marijuana or cannabis products, and if you test positive, you're going to be fired or disciplined for it. And for the most part, that is the rule, but the wrinkle comes in states that have determined that employers have to accommodate employees' medical marijuana use. So in most of the states, and certainly under federal law, there are statutes that say if an employee has a disability and they need some sort of accommodation in the workplace, whether it's a modification of their work environment, whether it's a modification of policies, a reduced schedule, lots of different accommodations can be reasonable, the employer has to engage in an interactive process with the employee to determine, you know, whether the employer can provide an accommodation for that disability. When it comes to medical marijuana, the states have really differed on whether an employer has a duty to reasonably accommodate an employee that's using marijuana for medical purposes. And so usually that would arise in a situation where, you know, a doctor has prescribed some sort of cannabis product, which is supposed to help alleviate symptoms or address anxiety or reduce pain. There's lots of different reasons that people are using it now. And the employee is using some sort of medical marijuana or cannabis product sort of under the supervision of a medical provider. And right now, it's really kind of a mess because we've got some states that have passed statutes actually saying that an employer has a duty to reasonably accommodate employees who are using medical marijuana. We have some states that have case law where this has been brought to the courts and they've said, well, maybe there's not a statute on point that says you have to accommodate medical marijuana use, but we do have a statute prohibiting disability discrimination discrimination and requiring reasonable accommodations in general. And I'm going to say that medical marijuana falls on that. So sometimes in states, we've seen them say no for a variety of reasons. There's no duty to reasonably accommodate medical marijuana use. But there is a Massachusetts decision that came out in the last couple of years that says, even though the state legislature hasn't affirmatively required it, we do think it falls under the general disability discrimination laws. And so you do have to reasonably accommodate that. So it really depends on what state you're in, which for national employers makes it really challenging to develop policies that address this issue, because obviously you want consistent policies across your workforce, but given the sort of variety among the states, at this point it's not really feasible. I will say most of the statutes say that even if there is a duty to accommodate medical marijuana use, there are certain exceptions depending on the industry. So if somebody's in a safety sensitive industry, or if you're subject to federal regulations on the point that require random drug testing, then, you don't have to reasonably accommodate it. They also have laws saying that, even if you do generally have to reasonably accommodate medical marijuana use, you don't have to tolerate impairment on the job. But it's really a mess, and it kind of just depends on the state that you're in, and that's why, specifically for this issue, it's really important to consult with, a counsel in your state to figure out what is required here, what's required of my industry. Certain federally regulated industries have different requirements than private employers would have. So, yeah, it's kind of all over the map.
Rebecca, I think you did an excellent job, summing up the legal situation we're in, which is a bit of a bog. I want to stress one thing you said that I think you gave a lot of information, but I want everyone to understand that's on this call. Even if you're in a state that has by statute protections for employees that use medical marijuana, to my knowledge, none of those states, and right now there's 15 of them, none of their laws say you have to allow somebody to be impaired or to use or to possess medical marijuana while at work, on work premises, or while doing the job. Okay. So, and that's a common thing that, like, especially when I deal with clients from certain parts of the country, I don't want to overgeneralize, but a lot of times I'll talk to somebody, in some of the southern states, for example, and they'll say, this doesn't make sense to me. Even though we have medical marijuana, we do X, Y, and Z, and we can't have people being high at work. And the point is that none of these laws allow or require you to permit people to be quote unquote high while at work. Now, the next logical implication from that is, okay, fine. Well, many of these statutes do have carve outs that specifically say that, okay, you cannot discriminate against a person because of a positive drug test result for medical marijuana or because of their status as a medical marijuana cardholder unless they're impaired at work, for example, the statute may say. Well, that begs the question, how do we tell when somebody's impaired at work? And that's kind of an open question right now. It's something that when I talk about this, I've actually done training for supervisors on best practices for documenting, impairment and trying to think about this. In the past, I think that under some of the, classic drug-free workplace policies, I think the inclination for a lot of employers was, okay, the manager over there said, he thinks that that person's, impaired, and you go ahead, you send them for a drug test, and then they come back positive for THC, and that's it. It's over. And that proves that that person was impaired at work. And the problem here is that a drug test in those circumstances, when you're trying to determine whether somebody is actually impaired on the job, and therefore you can take some type of disciplinary action against them, even if they're a medical marijuana cardholder, the drug test actually doesn't tell you much. And as a litigator and somebody who goes to court to fight these things regularly, the problem that I'm going to run into is that a THC test on a typical panel, drug panel, That tells me is that person ingested THC within maybe 30 days, maybe even 45 days. It does not prove that that person was impaired on that date and time in question while at work. And so the problem, that's the big problem you have. And so what you really got to start to look at is, how am I going to say that this person was impaired? What are the types of things that we want to look for? And what do you want to be telling your supervisors and managers to look out for? And in general, you know, there's no great answers. And until we have a breathalyzer for weed, which I keep reading, they're out there, you know, they're in the works, and the person that comes up with that is going to be a multi-gazillionaire. But until we're there, and it kind of goes back to just some common sense stuff. Tell people to make observations and make sure they record those observations. If it's not in writing, it didn't happen. That's something we always love to say as employment lawyers. So what does it look like? It looks like, you know, your supervisors and your HR people that are observing this, have two people observe, never have just one person. Get some backup. Those types of things. So there's little tricks that you can try, hopefully, to use to present your impairment case better than maybe you had been thinking about it before. So I got to say that one of the other big problems here with impairment and observations of impairment is the method of ingestion of cannabis products now has changed over the last couple years. Whereas in the past, if somebody went out on lunch and smoked a joint, they'd reek. You could smell it. So that's obviously one of the things that you can put, hey, on such and such date, so-and-so came in, there was the odor of marijuana, therefore we sent him for a drug test and we took this corrective action. Now, people vaping and using these types of pens and these products that are popular nowadays, they're popular because they don't smell. So it makes it even harder.
Yeah. And can just illustrate, you know, some of the situations that we've come across. You'll have people say, all right, well, we want to refer this person for a reasonable suspicion test, or we refer them for a reasonable suspicion test because they just smelled like marijuana. But you won't have any sort of contemporaneous notes about how else they may have seemed impaired. You won't have any sort of recollection or written recording of like, oh, you know, they were slurring, their eyes were glazed over, like none of that. And then later, you know, 2 years down the line when you're in litigation over this, you're arguing about did you really smell marijuana or not at the time. So it's actually really important that when people are observing some kind of suspicion of impairment that they're writing down everything they're observing, you know, not just a smell, because that's kind of hard to defend later on. You know, we've had situations too, now that it's fully legal here in California and you've got dispensaries and people working in dispensaries, I've heard people say, oh, well, my boyfriend manages a dispensary and he must have, his clothes got mixed in with mine and that's why they must smell, you know, and then you're arguing about whether that's a legitimate excuse or not. And you don't really want to be in that situation. I mean, we can all laugh at how kind of ridiculous that excuse is, but you know, you just never know what people are going to come up with. So, you know, one policy that I've seen be fairly successful for our clients is they'll have kind of like a reasonable suspicion form. So, you know, when they suspect that somebody is impaired at work, it needs to be filled out by two different witnesses, usually two different supervisor level people, and they write down their notes of why they think somebody seems impaired. It can include smell, but there just need to be other things too, like what was the behavior? What did they look like? What were they saying? And then you kind of have them record their notes on the form. The person, you know, goes off for the drug test, and then depending on the results, you know, in conjunction with the record that you have from the two witnesses, you're in a much better position to defend yourself for any decision that gets made arising out of it.
Okay, excellent. I'm going to jump in here for a minute. There are a few questions that have been asked, and let's see if we can tackle these. Some of them we've addressed in part, but maybe not entirely. One question, there are CBD products that contain THC, and it is unregulated. So the question is, how do you counter that?
Right, well, that kind of goes back to some of the things we touched on in the beginning. And that also really goes back to your first question, Mike, of terminology. I think that people sometimes fall into the trap of thinking that just because something is called quote unquote CBD, it has zero THC, and something that I've said and also Rebecca has echoed is the lack of uniform regulation either on the federal side or on the state side as to what the product is. But I guess driving at what this question says, there is CBD that's derived from cannabis and has some THC. Actually, I got to say, again, I don't want to get hyper technical with the biochemistry here, but all CBD has some level of THC, all of it. So that's why it can get a little confusing when people say zero THC. I mean, it's just a very, very low level. And what you're talking about here is you're talking about a whole host of chemicals that are referred to as cannabinoids, and they all have different effects. Some of them, as Rebecca said in the beginning, have alleged health benefits. They relax you, they take away anxiety, they might help with pain. And this is obviously subject to a lot more rigorous medical testing that hopefully we will have in the coming years here. And then there's some of it that's psychoactive. And so those would be, you know, THC is one of those molecules. So, and if I may, I want to kind of, you know, jump off on something here. I've actually had now in the context of, this was a union fight, actually. We had a person, one of the southern states, who was a union employee, who tested positive for THC. And it was kind of like the scenario, the hypothetical I gave before. The person then said, I don't have medical marijuana. I don't do it. I don't do recreational marijuana. I take, you know, CBD for my joint pain. So therefore, under the contract, under the CBA, you know, I want to retest. Furthermore, I want to retest with LabCorp, and they have this CBD test that'll show and it'll prove that what I took was CBD, not cannabis, not marijuana. So I said, wow, I'm not aware of such a test. And I looked into it, and I do see LabCorp does have this test, and they have a little one-page sheet where they kind of promote it. But it's not really a CBD test. What it does is it measures the ratio of these molecules. Is it the THC, you know, ratio versus the CBD ratio? And it just comes out in a ratio, comes out in a fraction like that. So, but look, if you're in a state that doesn't have any regulation on this, you know, you're in one of those still many states that allow you to have a zero tolerance drug policy. And if your policy says no THC, that's what it says, and that's what you test for, it really doesn't matter, you know, how much CBD, how much THC is in there, even if it's, you know, 0.3 or less or whatever it is, it still shows up. So, you know, it's out there. And I guess I gave that scenario to show you this is the cutting edge, the new frontier of employment disputes. It's not going to go away. It's only going to increase. And it's when you have LabCorp, which is a huge, you know, a huge testing operation throughout the country, starting to, you know, advertise these types of tests, it's only going to perpetuate these types of claims. So it just goes back to me. It goes back to the policies. Make sure you're defining what your policy is. And if I may, actually, it goes back. We skipped over this because there's so much to talk about. But when I have a client that comes to me and presents some of these types of questions, what do we do? Help us. What should we do? You know, we're in these types of states. This is what we do as a business. Actually, my first question to them is, okay, well, do you want to test for cannabis in the first place? Do you want to? Does it make sense? And Rebecca, I'm sure you could speak to this. I've actually had a lot of California companies, because California is one of those states that does not, by statute, protect employees from medical or recreational cannabis use in the work, in the workplace. It doesn't have these statutory employment protections. But the issue that I'm starting to see is that the job pool is shrinking. So if you are one of these companies that says, okay, we're just going to have this drug ban, we're going to have drug-free workplace, and that's it. Depending upon what industry you're in, you're no longer going to be able to hire the people that you want to hire.
Yeah, we definitely see that a lot in California. I mean, as you can imagine, a lot of the Silicon Valley job pool, if you were to test for THC at any given time, you would probably have like a third of people at least with positive results.
Right.
And so I think a lot of the tech companies really had to make a decision of, okay, are we really going to do a pre-employment drug screen and disqualify somebody based on the results? Or are we just going to have a policy that says you can't be impaired at work? And if you are impaired, then we'll do a test and, you know, you could be disciplined or terminated based on the results. And I think I've seen a lot of companies, especially kind of white collar tech office kind of jobs where there's not really a serious safety implication or anything like that, decide that they're not going to test pre-employment for cannabis anymore. I mean, they may still do a pre-employment drug screen for other types of drugs, or they may not. Mm-hmm. And they may just have a policy that says anytime we have a reasonable suspicion that you're impaired, that's when you'll be tested. And, you know, we do have a drug-free workplace policy. So if you come up positive, then we'll take appropriate steps. And I think depending on the industry, that can be the better approach, because it avoids a lot of this debate about, okay, what are you actually using? Is it for a medical purpose? California right now does not protect medical users. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next couple of years that a lot changes out here. And then we have a lot of people kind of scrambling to change their policies and their practices.
Okay. Excellent. Another question. Even if an employee has a disability and is allowed to legally use marijuana, isn't it perfectly acceptable to prohibit someone from coming to work high, just as it would be prohibited to come to work drunk or under the influence of alcohol?
Yes.
Yes. That's easy.
And,
yes.
You know, it's the same as any other kind of prescription drug, right? You know, if somebody's been prescribed opiates for a pain issue, but they're coming to work totally high, you don't have to accommodate that. If they're misusing a prescription that they've gotten from a doctor, but they're coming to work impaired, that is not something that you have to accommodate in any state.
Okay. Looking at the credit collection industry specifically, here's a question. Sometimes in our industry, the contracts our clients require us to sign say that we have to do drug testing, and nobody under the influence of any drug, including marijuana, is allowed to work on their particular portfolios. Is that something that is okay? Are there any other considerations that need to be made for the clients or companies that someone does business with when it comes to marijuana usage?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Well, there's a few things in there. Rebecca, I see, you know, joint employment is always a tricky one when it comes to those types of relationships, which I'm sure most of the people on the phone right now, if you're in that industry, and you know, you're probably aware of joint employment concerns in other areas. Certainly with staffing agencies, you see this a lot too. I see this a lot with, same question, with temporary workers, like in California, right? It's like we place, you know, half of our workforce in the warehouse comes through our temporary staffing agencies. So what can we do? I guess one thing I want to say is be aware of joint employment in the employment law arena. Okay, so whether you're talking about wage and hour laws, marijuana laws, anti-discrimination laws, you know, they all kind of have this test for joint employment that could differ slightly. What that test is going to be for some of these cannabis statutes, who knows? We'll probably find out soon. It usually revolves around control of the worker. So one point is, so make sure in your contracts, to the extent you can push back a little bit with end users, you allocate the risk of who's doing what. Are you performing the drug test for people? Well, if you're the one performing the drug test, you do have to make sure you make sure you're in compliance with whatever state you're providing that worker to. So if you're providing the worker to a state, for example, like Oklahoma, you got to understand that Oklahoma has a pretty robust regulatory scheme, or Iowa has a pretty robust drug testing scheme that you have to comply with. And even though maybe that worker isn't going to work for you, they're going to be working for the end user, you could be a joint employer with that end user. And so if they break the law or if you break the law, you both might be responsible. And so I would think that's going to equally apply to these protections that we've been talking about for use of medical marijuana in the workplace.
Yeah, one thing I'd add in addition to the joint employer issue is, at least in California, our anti-discrimination laws have an aiding and abetting provision, which says even if you're not considered a joint employer, if you're aiding and abetting an employer in violating the statutes, you can also be liable as well. So I don't know if other states have something similar, but you know, if you have somebody that you're contracting with that seems to be pushing you to do something that's not in compliance with state law, you should really push back and kind of let them know about, you know, well, it's not only us that are on the hook, it's going to be you too. You know, if they continue pushing something like that, you can always try to ask for indemnification agreement or something like that to protect yourself. The other place where I've seen this come up, where I've had people call, is they'll say that their insurance providers are requiring them to have pre-employment drug screens, not hire anybody that's under the influence or test positive for THC or cannabis. And that's sometimes workers' compensation insurance or just general liability insurance. And so that's another area where you might see this come up. And the same issues would apply. You really need to check to make sure that what they're asking you to do is in compliance with state law. And if it's not, you should let them know that they could be on the hook for any kind of liability that you face out of doing this.
Okay. Another question. Have you seen lawsuits for discrimination for enforcing zero tolerance when someone has a medical marijuana card?
Yes.
Well, yeah. So here in New Jersey, where I'm based out of, we actually have a case that's up right now in our Supreme Court, where, you know, that's basically the scenario. We had the plaintiff in that case is a funeral home director who got into a car accident. And he had back issues, so he had been prescribed medical marijuana, and he got into the car accident, and post-accident, pursuant to the employer's, you know, post-accident drug testing policy, he went and was tested, and of course he came up positive for marijuana. So the company enforced its zero tolerance policy, and now they're, you know, it's up before our Supreme Court, and based upon the justice's questions to the defense counsel, you know, in oral argument last week, I think it's pretty clear which way the court's going to come down here in New Jersey. They're going to follow what happened in Massachusetts. Rebecca had mentioned that about 10 minutes ago. You know, Massachusetts was one of the first Supreme Courts across the country to actually say, hey, let's slow down here. Somebody that does use medical marijuana, if they do have a disability under state disability law, they may be required to be protected and afforded the interactive process under our state law. It doesn't mean that an employer might not be able to make the argument that it's an undue hardship to accommodate somebody who's a medical marijuana user. But what those decisions say and what New Jersey's court is probably going to say and what Massachusetts's court has already said is that you can't simply just fire them without engaging in that process. You have to talk to them. You have to find out what's going on. You're entitled as the employer to get medical information. You should go ahead and do that. And you should document that process just like you would for any other type of accommodation situation. And do that. And if at the end of the day, you make the decision, it would be an undue hardship, for example, or they're not qualified to do the job, there's no accommodations that exist. Well, okay, maybe then you can go ahead and make your decision to fire that person or not to hire them. But if you just go ahead and fire them immediately because they tested positive and they're a medical marijuana cardholder and you're in a state like New Jersey or Massachusetts, you're going to have some difficulties. And I'll add New York in there too. So.
Yeah, building on Kia's point, or as he kind of alluded to, the trend in the litigation has really been most recently in favor of states deciding that employers have a duty to at least engage in an interactive process with employees. I think California might have been the first state that considered this issue back in the year 2000. It was really before the tide of public opinion had changed on these products, and California Supreme Court said there's no obligation to accommodate a medical marijuana user at work. And then there were several other states that followed that. But over the past several years, what we've actually seen is that the trend is starting to go in the opposite direction in the litigation. We've gotten, you know, a few states that have actually now said, well, Massachusetts has now said that even though there's not a statute expressly requiring it, the disability discrimination laws require it. We've had states that have passed statutes saying that employers have a duty to accommodate medical marijuana use. In those states, the employers challenged the laws and said they were preempted by federal law. And because federal law makes marijuana illegal, state law that's contrary is preempted and therefore invalid. In both of those recent cases, the courts found that there was no federal law preemption, that the state laws were valid, and that, you know, state statutes can require employers to accommodate medical marijuana. So I really think that there's now this trend kind of going in the direction. I think we're going to see a lot of cases coming down in the next several years across the country in states where either medical or recreational or both are legal, saying that at least you have to engage in the interactive process. And as Kia said, you know, the Massachusetts case acknowledged there will be times when, you know, medical marijuana is not a reasonable accommodation for the employee. You know, they talk about there's those federal regulations we mentioned earlier. If you're in the transportation industry and you're subject to Department of Transportation regulations, you know, allowing medical marijuana is not a reasonable accommodation because federal law requires you to do random drug testing and ensure that people are not using marijuana. You know, if you're a federal contractor, you may have a defense as well. You may be able to say it's an undue burden because federal law requires you to have a drug-free workforce. If the position is a very safety-sensitive position and you can demonstrate that the person, you know, would be impaired and would be unable to safely perform the job, then you may have an argument that there's an undue hardship. But the key is you have to actually go through that analysis. You can't just summarily say, oh, we're subject to federal law, we're saved, we don't have to go through this. You have to really engage with the employee, get the medical documentation. If you make some sort of preliminary determination that you can't accommodate the medical marijuana use, you have to go back to the employee, see if they're willing to work with their doctor to come up with a different prescription that wouldn't require using medical marijuana. So there's a lot of process that has to be involved in making that decision in those states where it's required.
I just want to say one other thing too on piggybacking on what Rebecca just said, the safety sensitive approach and that idea. I agree. I agree that that's going to probably factor into most states, especially when you have states that have these statutes that protect against discrimination against medical marijuana cardholders. For example, Nevada is one of the newer states that just passed the law in effect January 1st, 2020, which says you can't make an adverse employment decision or fail to hire somebody for a positive THC result. And then they say, unless it's a safety sensitive position, unless you could lose federal funding, unless it would be contrary to a federal contract, unless it's in one of these, you know, positions, firefighter, police officer, et cetera, et cetera. My caveat though is be careful because not every state has a safety sensitive carve out. I hate to keep talking about New Jersey, but New Jersey just amended their medical marijuana law 6 months ago to include that type of anti-discrimination provision, and their statute does not contain a carve-out for safety-sensitive positions. So states like Nevada, Oklahoma, for example, these do. Oklahoma even defines in great detail, which I love. They define what a safety sensitive position is. Some states don't, though. So if you're in a state like New Jersey that does not carve out safety sensitive positions, and you have a medical marijuana card holder, and you wouldn't be at risk for losing a federal contract or federal grant money, for example. But again, you can make the argument they're in a safety sensitive position. It's going to be a lot trickier for you to not hire the person or fire them based upon a positive THC result when they are a medical marijuana cardholder.
Okay. We've got another question. Have you seen lawsuits for those states that allow recreational use but still drug test for THC and deny employment for a positive screen?
That's an area where you're the safest. Right now, there's no state that says you have to allow recreational marijuana use. And if somebody doesn't come up with a medical excuse, if they say, oh, I was just using this in my free time, you know, for fun, you're really in a much better position to take steps to discipline or terminate that employee. There was a case that's not directly on point in Colorado, but I think is useful for this analysis. You know, there's a law in Colorado that says you can't terminate employees for lawful off-duty conduct. California has a similar statute. I think lots of other states have something similar, basically saying the employer cannot terminate you for something you did that was lawful in your free time. At the time this case came up in Colorado, medical marijuana was legal, but recreational was not yet legal. And there was an employee who was terminated for, you know, failing a drug screen. He actually said, well, I was using it for medical purposes, which is legal under Colorado state law. You shouldn't terminate me because, you know, there is the statute that says you can't terminate me for lawful off-duty conduct. And the Colorado Supreme Court found that actually that didn't apply, that because there's a federal prohibition on marijuana use, it didn't matter that the state statute said what he was doing was legal. He wasn't engaging in, quote, lawful off-duty conduct, so he could be terminated. And so I think even in states where you have those statutes that say, you know, you can't terminate employees for any lawful off-duty conduct, I think you'll probably find that, at least for now, courts are not going to say, okay, yeah, you can't terminate people for marijuana use, especially in a state where they've already said there's no duty to accommodate medical use. But that said, there's been so much change in the case law here. So as for right now, I think you're safe, but I would, again, just be careful, because seeing where these cases have been going over the past few years on the medical side, I think opinions have been shifting fairly rapidly. The laws have been shifting rapidly. I know there is now a New York City ordinance that says you can't even test people for marijuana at all, with certain exceptions. So I would
starting,
be careful.
Starting May 9. Yeah. Starting May 9.
So just be careful. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And here's something on this. This is super cutting edge, right? Okay. So Rebecca brought up these states, various states that have these lawful off-duty conduct laws. What we're starting to see now, not a whole bunch, but we've now seen a couple, is CBD use. Okay, so North Carolina, woman gets into minor workplace accident. The wind blows a car door open and it hits her arm. So she now gets drug tested under the post-accident drug test provision of the employer's policy. She tests positive for THC, super, super low amount, underneath the federal DOT threshold. So in other words, if the vendor that the employer was using had just followed federal DOT guidance on nanograms a milliliter, she wouldn't have even shown up as positive. But whatever vendor she was using, it was like hypersensitive. So she shows up positive and she says, I don't do any medical marijuana. I don't do any recreational marijuana, never have. I do take CBD. And so the reason why this case is interesting is because North Carolina does not have medical marijuana, doesn't have recreational marijuana. They do have a lawful off-duty conduct statute. So her argument that she's been making now in federal court in North Carolina was it is lawful. And unlike the Colorado case that Rebecca just told you about, which said, hey, you know, marijuana is still a Schedule I drug under federal law, so we're going to use that definition for what we're determining is something that would be lawful off-duty conduct. It's unquestioned right now that as of November 2018, industrial hemp and CBD derived from industrial hemp is lawful. It's no longer a Schedule I drug. So what she's arguing is this is lawful off-duty conduct. Taking CBD is whatever way you slice it, state law, federal law, whatever, it's lawful. So it's very, very interesting case. And again, it goes right back to something we talked about a little while ago. Like, how do you tell when somebody says they use CBD versus, for example, taking a puff off of a medical marijuana joint? It's really, I'm not sure there is an answer, but we'll see how that case, you know, kind of winds its way through. And one other thing I just wanted to say, just to be clear, Rebecca referenced it, New York City. So New York City has an ordinance that's going to take effect on May 9th, 2020. And that basically says it's an unlawful discriminatory practice for any employer to pre-employment test for THC unless it fits within one of these categories, which is basically your typical safety sensitive type positions. So that's noteworthy because it's the only law so far in the country that makes just the act of testing for THC. So just sending them off to do the panel that includes THC, you know, automatically you've now violated the law unless they're a firefighter, a police officer, et cetera, and they fit within one of the exceptions to the law. And I would also be careful in Maine. I'd be careful in Nevada, states that have recreational cannabis. Their laws could be susceptible to some off-duty type protections built in there, although it's not very clear yet. There hasn't been case law yet out of that. Illinois just legalized recreational marijuana starting January 1st, 2020. And actually there was a lot of dispute whether or not their recreational cannabis law did provide employment protections for those who used recreational marijuana. So much so that the legislature had to go ahead and amend the law in December just to make it clear that you could still have drug testing policies, and it did not provide protection for off-duty recreational use. But the way the law had originally been drafted over the summer, there was a lot of debate over it, so they actually had to amend it. So it just underscores that especially if you operate in several states, if you're a multi-state employer, you got to be on top of it. And, you know, not to toot our own horn, but, you know, hire somebody like Rebecca or me or any other employment lawyer, you know, in your state or multi-state, and make sure you're monitoring this stuff, because you could very, very easily run afoul of the law by just following the way you've been doing things for the last 10, 20, 30 years.
Excellent. Well, we've just about run out of time, but before we wrap up, and I let Kia and Rebecca go, what I want to do is maybe ask them to share any parting words of wisdom, any other key takeaways they want people to remember as they go forth back into their office, or address anything they didn't get a chance to talk about, what wanted to, because they felt it was important, but just a chance to sort of offer some concluding remarks. So Rebecca, would you mind going first?
Yeah. So I think, you know, overall the theme is a lot really depends on what state you're in. It depends on your state. It depends on your industry. And that's why it's really important to consult with outside counsel who are really familiar with both your industry, any regulations on point, any federal laws that are relevant, as well as any state laws. As we alluded to during the presentation, there's so many cases that are currently pending right now that could totally change the landscape of this. We've also got state statutes that are pending. We've got new states legalizing marijuana all the time, which is going to result in more litigation in those states. So there's a lot to keep up with here. And I would say all of that just really, really weighs in favor of being cautious, always consulting with counsel when these issues come up with your employees. Make sure you're getting outside advice, because otherwise you may be, you know, inadvertently running afoul of something you didn't even know was required.
Awesome. Excellent. Thank you very much. Kia?
Sure. So what I want to leave everyone with is a quick bullet list here, best practices. And these are all things that we've talked about over the last hour that both, you know, Rebecca and I have kind of touched on. So nothing new, but just a quick little recap for you. So number one, you know, think about what you do, what your company culture is, what does your policy say now? And I would ask yourself the question, do you want / need to test for cannabis? Second, you know, look at your safety sensitive roles. Look at your job descriptions for those roles. Make sure they jive with each other. Third, you know, and this is something Rebecca just said, and we've been saying it over and over again, you got to look at what state you're in, get an employment lawyer that you trust, review the obligations of whatever state you operate in, okay? So for example, before, safety sensitive roles, I just said, you might be in a state, however, that does not exempt safety sensitive roles as an exception to non-discrimination for medical marijuana users. Some states you could. So then you would want to look at that and beef up your safety sensitive positions and job descriptions, for example. Fourth, be prepared to engage in the interactive process, explore other accommodations. Rebecca did a really great job of explaining what that was and what that entails. But again, we've said it over and over again, the trend is going to be that, you know, no matter what state you're in, my prediction is in 5 to 10 years, the majority of states under their anti-discrimination laws and disability discrimination and workplace laws, you're going to have to do this stuff anyway. Next, think about educating your managers, your HR staff, your supervisors on your policies and what obligations they have. We talked about that a while back. Observations, impairment. How are you gonna deal with it? What's your strategy for doing that? So you might have to do a little bit of training for your managers on that. And then lastly, one of the first things we talked about was, you know, look at your policies, look at your drug-free workplace policy, look at your drug testing policy, look at your communication pieces, and make sure you got it all under control, that you're in compliance, and that everything is about as clear as it can possibly be, understanding that it's all pretty hazy right now. So that's it.
Well, Kia, Rebecca, thank you so much for trying to clear the haze and provide some much needed information on a very important topic. I really appreciate you taking the time to share that information with us. It was a great job. This webinar clearly would not have been possible without your participation. Thanks to everybody who asked questions and who participated. A final reminder that a recording of this event will be posted to the webinar recordings page on accountsrecovery.net in the next day or so, and available for free for anybody who wants to download it. So be sure to take advantage of that, especially all of the great information that was included today. So thank you, everybody. Kia, Rebecca, thank you so much. It was a great job. Really appreciate your time and your insights. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody. Have a great day. Take care.